What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar. This week, I'm joined by podcast producer Ben Elman. Hey, Ben.
Hello.
Good morning. We've got a bunch of things to discuss, potentially a guest here to talk about Switch 2 and Summer Game Fest stuff, but we will definitely be talking about the remnants of Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference. Sherlyn and Nate Ingram had a really good discussion on campus, so we put that up on the feed. They got some great guests on that, so I think they covered like the most of the bunch of the biggest bits of the news there. And I've got some follow-up thoughts, especially around Liquid Glass, which is Apple's new UI. So we'll do some of that chat. We've got some news to dive into. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes and drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. Especially if you have questions for Ask Engadget, we're taking those there. We'll answer them on the show, and it may become a piece on the site as well. Also, we typically broadcast Thursday mornings on our YouTube channel, so join us for our live stream there. I'm aiming for 10:30 a.m. Eastern. Kind of switches up depending on like when guests can actually do it. So just stay tuned to our YouTube channel. You'll see when things are scheduled, and stay tuned to me on Blue Sky and, you know, all over the place. All right, let's talk about the Switch 2 and Summer Game Fest and all that stuff. And joining us to do that is Senior Editor Jessica Condit. Hey, Jess, how's it going?
Yeah, hey, Summer Game Fest was wild, and we are still publishing stories from it. So it's definitely like not over on my end, but the weekend is done. I'm out of LA and back at home with my Switch.
With your Switch 2. It is wild because I've heard a lot of people were taking a lot of, you know, briefings on games that will be embargoed for the next few weeks. So I feel like that is like the premier E3 experience a little bit too. Like, we don't have E3 anymore. We have this thing, which is going to Jeff Keighley's Summer Game Fest, his announcements and everything, but also Microsoft and Sony are hosting events around that. Does it feel really different from E3 for you?
Oh yeah. So I wrote a thing. I do a weekly video game like roundup column, and I just kind of have thoughts there. And so, yeah, I talked about like I went to almost 10 E3s, like 7 E3s, a lot of E3s.
Nice.
And Summer Game Fest is a very different vibe. It's very much more my speed. E3, by the end of it, was a huge overblown, overinflated, like corporate, tized, you know, just trade show. And it was not very illuminating in terms of what I think drives the industry, the kinds of games that I want to play. You know, the AAA machine, it has its purpose, but it isn't all that this industry has. It's not what I'm interested in, personally. So Summer Game Fest is very much, it's smaller, which helps, but there's also a focus on kind of inviting in more players, more game makers, you know, more styles of games, smaller publishers. The industry is also full of indie and mid-sized publishers now. So there's a space for these people to shine. You know, it still costs money to participate in this show. So we're not getting like the super small games. There are thousands of incredibly small games that don't have the budget to do shows like this. But Summer Game Fest is a better effort than E3 in terms of the amount of different types of experiences you can see. So that's really cool.
It feels like more like a celebration of games, like from the name, rather than the industry event, right? It's sort of like the difference between CES and I don't know. We actually don't have something that is equivalent to Summer Game Fest for the technology
industry.
Like a fun
industry. One.
Like a fun
guys,
one.
You don't have a fun one.
We don't have. I mean, listen, E3 used to be part of CES, so that's why those things just felt so tightly related, right?
And the ESA, who put on E3 back in the day, they're actually moving to, they're doing a separate show in Las Vegas this next year. So they're kind of trying to revive the E3 brand in Vegas, which is very funny considering the show's start as part of CES back in the day. So
back in the day, I think it's actually starting in Atlanta. One of those, like,
oh,
there was
really?
A Chicago show, there was Atlanta CES too, and I think E3 was in Atlanta at some point.
Wow.
So that would make my life a lot easier because I could just hop over to that. Any highlights for you, Jess? Because there are so many games. I kind of lost track after a certain point. We also got new hardware. Microsoft actually showed off the ROG Xbox Ally thing, which just looks like the Asus ROG with an Xbox button and some niceties to their take your pick. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, the hardware was cool. I know a lot of people were excited about that, but for me, that was a little more expected. We expect Xbox at this point to do a handheld. It would be very silly if they didn't. And the fact that it's an ally, that makes a lot of sense to me. But personally, I didn't really have a ton of like huge news, like breaking news headlines, you know, that really caught my eye during the show. The Resident Evil Requiem reveal was obviously pretty awesome. Everyone's very stoked on that, including me. And we're going to have, I think we have a preview of that live today or soon.
Okay.
So be looking out for that. But I liked Sword of the Sea. This is the game that I played that has really kind of piqued my interest. And this is from the artist behind Journey back in the day, Matt Nava. So I talked with him and played his new game. And he talked about like kind of running from the aesthetic of Journey over the past decade. He's been making games and he's been trying to not make a game that looks like Journey. But finally, he's just saying, this is the game I want to make. This is what's in me. I'm going to make an orange game again. So he did. I played it. And it's like, it's one of those games that like can really suck you out of whatever world you're in. And it puts you in the game world. And it's just, you know, even on the busy show floor, I had a really good time playing that. So
love the aesthetic here.
Yeah.
You can also see it's like from the person who brought you Journey, like very similar there. What was the game from the Hyperlight Drifter guy? It was also 3D. This feels similar to that too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there was Hyperlight Breaker and now there's like Sable, but that had more of a kind of cel shaded aesthetic. But yeah, there are a few games kind of like this. This is very, it's like you're surfing on a sword through the desert. But it feels like skateboarding. Like this game feels like an action game, but it's also very peaceful. It's a really cool mix.
Solar Ash. Yeah. That's the game I'm thinking of. This feels like Solar Ash.
Well, it's funny. The game that it made me think about is like Alto's Adventure, Alto's Odyssey.
Yeah.
But like 3D.
Back in the day. Yeah. Like definitely. 3D.
Nobody talks about Solar Ash. That was a fun time. I enjoyed that. And I also really love Hyperlight Drifter. So I'm glad that they're doing Breaker. I guess we haven't seen
That studio is actually making Possessors now, which was also at the show. But I saw that earlier this year. So I didn't play it at the show, but I saw it before. Possessors looks very cool as well.
I just love their aesthetic. They're always like hot pink, hot colors, hot neon, something or other. So their aesthetic is always fun. Cool.
So, Jess, do you have anything to say about Mouse PI for Hire?
I do.
Because I've seen so many videos of this. Like, just something about the algorithmic bubble that I'm in says, you want to see, like, first-person rubber hose violence. And it feels so strange to me because, on one hand, I'm like, this is an incredible aesthetic. I really like the idea of this, but also there's something about like graphic rubber hose violence.
It looks cool.
Just feels weird to me.
Yeah.
Because like I'm so used to Disney and everything, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's exactly what they're playing with here. So, okay. I have like a journey with Mouse where when this game was announced like 2 years ago, I think it was 2023. It was like a very early trailer with like placeholder art and like grid, you know, it's in a grid developer level very early. And people freaked out because they liked the rubber hose mice as gangsters. They liked the violence, the first person shooting of these rubber hose cartoons, you know, like that's cool, I guess. But I wasn't really into it, right? And it's been like 2 years of getting little drips and drabs about this game. And I didn't get it until I sat down with the developers at Summer Game Fest and they walked me through a level. And Mouse is like surprisingly deep. The developers at it's Fumi Games, the developers, they're really like taking time to make this a rich, like mechanically complex game. There are tons of different weapons. Like there's a freeze ray, there's a turpentine gun that like strips all the enemies of their paint and turns them into skeletons. And then there's like, a huge story. And there's Troy Baker as the lead character, like full voice acting.
Of course.
And there's like there's a detective aspect where you go back to your headquarters and you're piecing the puzzle together like an actual detective game. You know, they're not just leaning on this art style to sell a game. They're actually like creating a really rich experience. And that's what surprised me. I honestly had no idea what to expect. But I'm like,
and it
super
is pretty
into
smart.
It. Yeah.
It's pretty smart to combine what was happening in books and animation at this time, because you have, you know, Rubber Hose Mickey and all of that, but also like Dashiell Hammett books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like the idea of the, you know, hard-boiled gumshoe is happening in this same time frame.
Yeah. No, it's really fun.
I look at this engine, I'm like, somebody make a Who Framed Roger Rabbit game? Like, come on.
That's kind of it, right? Yeah, yeah, that's kind of what this is. Yeah.
That movie is a miracle.
I would love that.
The IP would never like get all back together for that. The fact that that movie exists is just a whole wild thing, but it is really cool. What was the 2D game that also leaned on old style animation? The platform.
Cuphead.
After Cuphead was released, people talked about like, oh, you're just really bad at playing Cuphead. Poor Dean Takahashi, my former colleague, was made fun of on the internet for that. But it also feels like we just stopped talking about Cuphead in a certain way. That game is hard. I think like the animation is actually too busy to make that a fun game. But it is cool to see more studios kind of like leaning on getting us some of these old stymie animation back. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just cool to see a different approach. Like, even though we know what this Rubber Hose style looks like, it's very, it's very mousy. And I asked the developers, I was like, okay, why mice though? And they were just like, no, it's just the Rubber Hose style. You can make them really stiff, you can make them really floppy, and that gives you a lot of like play with being funny or having some action. And yeah, I totally understand it.
It feels like they're playing with fire, though. Like, I'm surprised that they haven't gotten a cease and desist already.
Isn't that all, like, free reign now?
It's all free reign.
Copyright expired, yeah.
And also, multiple studios, like, were doing this kind of style of animation. So, like, Disney can't just own this one.
Exactly.
Thing, you know? Yeah. That's the whole thing. What I like is, like, we're looking at the models, and they all look like they're... They're basically like you could see the plane shift when you walk around them. So they still look 2D. It's not like they're cheating with cell shading, which is what I think a lot of games do now. Like Street Fighter does it. The Dragon Ball, like every game does it, where it's just like you're pretending a cell shaded 3D figure is a sprite or a 2D plane. And that's not true. That's a lie. These look like they're actually 2D and they're switching as you move around. That's fun.
Yeah, truly. Like when you can like climb up on the rafters, and when they played, and I watched while they talked and stuff. And when they looked down on the characters, they were 2D. They were flat, like, you know, like paper in this like 3D world. It's definitely 2D.
That's fun. That's fun. That reminds me of like old PlayStation 1 games did that a lot. Final Fantasy Tactics, one of my favorite, when you pan the camera around.
Yeah.
It's just switching the sprite because they're all 2D sprites. That's cool. Any other highlights for you, Jess? Because we could just talk about Switch 2 as well.
Let's see. I mean, the Outer Worlds 2 release date, that was cool. I actually want to call out this one game, Relooted. So this was during Day of the Devs, I believe, which there were so many streams with like so many games. So if you can find, like, we have a list of all the streams that went down. If you want to spend a nice afternoon just watching a bunch of game streams and new game announcements, Day of the Devs, Wholesome Games, Women-Led Games, Frosty Games, like all the streams, they're great. But the one that I liked was Relooted. So this is from the studio Nyamacop, and they're from South Africa. They're one of South Africa's, or one of Sub-Saharan Africa's largest indie studios, period. They made Semblance back in the day, which was a really cool platformer. And now they're making this game that's about rescuing African artifacts from the Western colonizers that stole them. All the museums. And
so
all,
it's like that. Yeah. It's like that scene in Enter the Spider-Verse where the Indian Spider-Man is saying, like, all of our artifacts went to the British Museum.
Exactly. Or Black Panther 1. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And it's like not even a joke. There's like a million artifacts in British and Western museums that do not belong to them. So this game is about taking them back. Yeah, and it looks really cool where you plan your heist through these different environments and then you execute it. So it's a little bit strategy and then you action, you know, your way through it. And I trust Niamacop to make a good game. It looks really fun. And I just want to also like put some good news out there about this game, because I think there's going to be some pushback against it. And I just want to put the good vibes out there.
Good vibes are great.
I understand.
Let me describe this game too. It looks like a 2D platformer, but like in the style of like Prince of Persia. But you're also doing a little bit.
It's like you're breaking through 3D environments in a 2D plane. Mm-hmm. And then it's like fully voice acted with these wonderful characters, you know, seems to have a good sense of humor. I love the concept and I trust the execution of this game. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. I remember seeing
now the name Relooted makes a lot more sense to me.
Yeah.
Is it really Relooting? But folks, Indiana Jones was actually always wrong. It does not belong in a museum. Yeah.
It does not.
Jess, I'm not sure if you have anything to say about it, but I'm looking forward to Big Walk by House.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of how much I loved Untitled Goose Game. And it like also seems like there are so few couch co-op games being made now that I am like keeping a particular eye on the good ones. Another one I'm really excited about is I think it's called Sheep Herds, like exclamation point. I'm not sure if we even saw anything about it from Summer Games Fest this year, but it is a couch co-op game where you and a friend need to herd sheep as sheepdogs. It seems beautiful. Let's talk about House if you have anything to say about it.
Yeah, so Big Walk is also on my list. We saw a trailer during the Day of the Devs. I don't think we wrote it up this year because we'd seen a bit about the game, but the trailer showed off like a little more about the co-op, and you're just these cute little characters, like I don't even know, they're geometric shapes, like you're almost like kids' toys, like little birds made out of kids' toys, and you're wandering around with your friends and you communicate with voice somehow in the game, but it like has actual impact on the gameplay. Or you can like find your people just through voice. I'm not quite sure how that part works, but it looks really cool. And you're right, there need to be more couch co-op games. But I actually just wrote a thing about like how most puzzle games are actually couch co-op games.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so I wanted to get you on to talk about that a few weeks ago, that like just blueprints, like it doesn't matter if it's a single player game, you need maybe a couple of heads to get through it at a fun pace. So yeah, any puzzle game could definitely be a multiplayer game if you make it like that. You could just pass the controller back and forth, right?
Yeah, or just, I mean, if you can see the puzzle on the screen, you can help solve it, right? There you go. Mm-hmm. That's all you need sometimes. Yeah, but Big Walk looks so cute, and House is another good developer, so I think they're going to do it right. This one reminds me a bit of like Baby Steps, that kind of genre of like really talented developers making or leaning into the silly premises that they have and just like really pushing them to their limits technically. With these very silly characters and
let games
premises.
Be weird. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm really looking forward to Baby Steps too. Like Bennett Foddy has my heart.
Yeah. Yeah. That looks good.
I want to throw a brief shout out to Beast of Reincarnation. I don't know if you saw that, Jess, but the Pokemon people are making a Souls-like post-apocalyptic action RPG. I'm like, what the hell just happened? Are they just sick of Pokemon? That's so cool. What a cool idea.
Yeah. No, let Game Freak go. Yeah.
Let them go. And it's on the Xbox showcase too. So like really, really wild that this is all happening.
They're finally living up to the freak in their name.
I almost wonder, it's like a little Princess Mononoke like too. I almost wonder if people are sick of these types of games. I don't know. Or are we just like have an unending appetite for Souls likes at this point?
Well, yeah. I mean, there are so many, but they mm-hmm. do seem to find an audience every time. So I guess if there are enough people buying these different games, you know, maybe they'll buy this one and not that one. But like, there's enough out there to keep it rolling.
people who are playing Black Myth Wukong, and that wasn't even a good game.
So, yep.
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. I know.
I played a bit of that, and I'm like, after hour five, I'm like, you got nothing else with this combat, do you? It's the same thing over and over again. It looks pretty, though.
It's not for me, yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. Anything you want to add about the Xbox handheld, Jess, or just like Microsoft's idea there? Because the report was that they're going to be focusing more on Windows handhelds rather than a dedicated Xbox handheld. I do think that probably makes more sense for Microsoft, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think anything they can do to break out of the console ecosystem that they have built and take advantage of all the ones around them, that's absolutely Microsoft's play. Software is going to be, I think, their major focus going forward. I think console manufacturing is not the end game for Xbox anymore. So
it's true.
Yeah, this makes sense. Yeah.
This also kind of like goes hand in hand with what we were talking about. I was like, I think they should just make the Xbox Series X and their little boxes just like Windows boxes, right? But they're actually
like
just
an OUYA? You want an OUYA?
I want
a micro console. Let's go. I'm ready.
Listen, a Xbox Series
X,
they're more expensive now, but
flop that was.
Yeah, a $500 gaming PC, like that kind of doesn't exist. Like you cannot build a good $500 gaming PC if Microsoft just let those Series X's be, let it be a Windows box. Okay, let people install Steam or whatever, which you can do on these, the ROG Xbox Ally, like these handhelds with Windows, you can install Steam itself on it. You could do whatever you want on it. Bring that to your living room too. I don't know.
I agree. And I think that is a play. I'm not sure. I don't know what the business side of that equation is like, right? Like there has to be a reason it hasn't happened yet, but I agree. It makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
It will probably take work because basically that would involve like putting a lot of people on, hey, put Windows on this Xbox that requires horsepower or manpower and also Q&A and all that sort of thing. But yeah, I don't think anybody wants like another Xbox console that sits under your TV, but make it a PC thing and let it be. You could be under your TV, could be under a monitor. It's just a Windows box. How about that?
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Awesome. So,
while we're talking about handhelds,
I do want to have your thoughts, Jess, on the Switch 2 and your feelings about that. We've got Sam Rutherford's review of the console up on the site. He gave it a score of 93. Loves the screen, polished design, magnetic Joy-Cons. I love the magnetic Joy-Cons. The base storage, the better performance. Cons, he thinks battery life could be better. That's true. The dock needs more USB-C ports. It's more expensive and no VRR when connected to a TV. Your thoughts, Jess, on this thing?
Okay, so I took my Switch to Summer Game Fest because it arrived the day I left. So
your Switch 2.
I just took it. Switch 2,
sorry.
Yes. Took
sorry,
Switch
I have to be
two.
Clear.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right. Now I'm just already, I've already transitioned. This is
that's
just
your
Switch.
Only Switch okay, now. But. Yeah.
Switch 2, I took with me. So I played it a little bit, you know, on the road and a little bit at home. And hey, Mario Kart World is great. That's
so good.
My review so far. No, I'm having a lot of fun. I like it. It's heavier than I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. Like weirdly, it's thin and nice, but it's a little heavy. The screen is nice and big and bright, like especially compared with my Steam Deck. It's like brighter and nicer. I'm having a good time. I agree with you. The thunk of the Joy-Cons is
so good.
Really fabulous. Yeah, really good. Good hardware.
I think on my TikTok, somebody who works for Nintendo was like, yeah, internally, we are trying to tell people to show off the thunk because it sounds and feels good. So that was.
Wait, actually, somebody who works for Nintendo?
They say they work for Nintendo. I have not done the legwork for it. But
your uncle? Yeah.
Everybody's uncle works for Nintendo. Yeah.
This thing is very big, I will say. So like my daughter wants to take a look at it and she held it and she has tiny little hands. She has tiny little 6-year-old hands. So she spends most of her time on the Switch Lite. And that makes me think like young kids, they're probably gonna have to wait a little while to play the Switch Lite or play the Switch 2 docked and you put the Joy-Cons on the little, you know, gamepad thing and maybe they could play it that way. That's easier to hold. Yeah. I'm working on a review of the Switch 2 Pro controller. I don't know if you've touched that, Jess.
I have.
It's good.
I like it.
I think it's the best controller Nintendo has ever made. Like that is my pitch going forward because it just feels good. The buttons are great and nice and clicky and responsive and a little bit customizable. I don't know about you. I hated the Switch 1 Pro controller. It felt cheap and junky to me. I don't know what it was, but that was just my feelings in my hands with that thing.
Interesting. I don't remember having any big feelings about the original one, but the new one is awesome. And I've compared it to the 8-bit Doe controller that connects to the Switch. And I think it's comparable completely. I think they feel very similar, which is a good thing. 8-bit Doe knows what it's doing. So, you know, anything that feels like that is good.
The 8-bit Doe Ultimate controller is fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that one, you know, anything that feels like that is good. And it feels a bit like that. So I'm good.
It's all like Nintendo gave us like the basic gamepad shape that we're all kind of copying, right? It's like with the SNES, Sony just added like little arm bars to that, you know, like everyone to a certain degree is just like trying to recreate the shape of the SNES controller, but a little more, give you more triggers, give you more like hand grip and stuff. And I just feel like, man, they've done it again. I don't know what happened with the Switch 1 controller. I think at best that thing is forgettable, right? Like you may not just even think about it. The 8-bit Doe stuff, I love to hold. I love the way they feel. I love the way they click and the buttons feel good. And that is all true for the Switch 2 Pro controller as well. So happy to report that thing is good. Maybe not worth $85. It is way too expensive.
Maybe
so
not. The remapping was nice too, because you can remap really quickly just through the software, like in-game. You can
in-game remap per game too, customizable pretty easily. I have not found an actual use for that yet. Maybe with fighting games, though, I will. But it feels good. I like that those buttons are out of the way, and you're not going to hit that mistakenly. Because that on other controllers, like the Xbox Elite sometimes, or the PlayStation 1, sometimes you may hit those buttons when you don't mean to. That's a whole thing.
I play with them mm-hmm. like too much. You know, I just click them all the time.
They're just little fidgeties.
They're
anything
fun,
else?
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on the Switch 2, Jester? I guess things you're looking forward to. Like, I played a bit of Tears of the Kingdom on this, and it just feels like this is a whole other game. I wish this is how it always was, because we just, like, lived in the trenches of 30 FPS, and that game looked like sludge when I played it on my TV, on my projector. You really noticed the flaws more. But now it's like beautiful, smooth 60 FPS. Maybe we're not getting true 4K, but we're getting higher res in 1080. Like, it just looks and feels like a whole different game to me. I don't know if you've experienced that yet.
No, I haven't really booted up anything impressive. I'm very curious to see what something like Cyberpunk, you know, how it feels, how it looks on this thing. That might be next on my list. Yeah, I mean, I still have Cuphead on my Switch 2 right now, too. So maybe I'll just dive into that since we were talking about it. Yeah, I'm stoked on the Switch 2. It's cool to see people excited about this console. Like, they sold an insane amount of units, more than 3 million. So, like, this is, it's fun to step back and just kind of watch it all unfold, right?
It was cool. I did the midnight launch at Best Buy, and it was cool to be around a group of nerds who were just like excited about a thing, because the world is on fire right now, right? Like, everywhere you turn, even while you guys were doing Summer Game Fest, there were, you know, very valid protests out there against like the crappy immigration.
We're going to talk about that in a minute.
We will. But everything is terrible, and it's nice to have like this one thing. It's just like, hey, we could take a break here and celebrate this thing a little bit. It's very consumery. It's very, you know, this is probably the worst of our culture at times, but also sometimes we need a little something to keep going, folks. Mm-hmm. And for me, that something is Mario Kart World.
So I did want to mention that there are some known issues with the Switch 2. There is a battery indicator issue where it's not showing you like the true battery level. We have a article on Engadget with some steps on what you can do to help fix that. I've also seen reports on Blue Sky and Reddit and other places that the Joy-Cons are having like a little bit of an issue with charging and firmware. Jess, have you heard anything about that? Have you experienced it?
Nope, not myself. Everything's been fine over here. I haven't even seen
those
reports.
That's great. Okay, so now I'm going to pose the question to you that I posed to everyone else last week, which is, it's so surprising to me that the Switch 2 sold this many units without a killer app or, you know, big launch game. So when do you think the Switch 2 is going to really hit its stride?
I think, I mean, every console takes a while to rev up, right? But Nintendo occupies its own weird bubble in the timeline, and they can just make shit pop. So, like, yeah, we don't have...
Yeah,
but we don't have a Zelda. You're right. Like, there isn't a huge title on this one.
Mario Kart World is huge for what it is.
You know, and it's
Donkey Kong is next month,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not... It's not a Zelda, yeah. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, people think of Mario Kart as kind of a utility, actually. Right. Like, it's so funny that, like, when I was thinking about, like, how have I conceived of Mario Kart in the last, like, decade or so, I think of it more as, like, the Ethernet is on or the Wi-Fi is
on.
It's
always there.
Like, there is, there is a new Mario Kart, like, that exists.
You don't appreciate it enough. Like, when your Ethernet goes bad, you will cry. You know, when
that's true. That's true. So, yes, like Mario Kart is a big deal, but maybe I'm not making a big enough deal.
Donkey Kong is also a big deal to have new Donkey Kong back, right?
I'm so struck that I think a lot of the chatter that I've seen online of people rolling their eyes at the Switch 2 is they're not saying that it needs a big launch game, but they are drawing a circle around it. Maybe they don't even know that they are expecting a big launch game, but like that's what they're criticizing.
And meanwhile, Nintendo's like, what, the fastest selling console of all time is not enough for you folks? Like, yes, this is not a failure. Yes, it does not have a killer launch game. Yeah.
We also have user Gerald Tech Show in the chat saying, no YouTube, like many exclamation points. That's a big thing, too.
If only you had a device that could watch YouTube. If only.
Well, yeah, okay, but I was the one talking about how the Switch 2 didn't feel like it had, like, big draws for anyone in the, like, late elementary school to early high school demographic, which is still a huge demographic for Nintendo, because everybody else was talking about Cyberpunk and everything. And I'm like, do you really want to give a 12-year-old Cyberpunk? I don't think you do.
I mean,
and the lack of a YouTube app on a Switch 2 is also pretty huge, because what do middle school kids love more than YouTube?
It's true.
Yeah, but what's more dangerous for kids than YouTube?
It's fine. Maybe it's a good
thing. Okay, so
no, I am not. No, I think we need a
over YouTube.
No, we need a YouTube app. I agree. I'm not. Like,
I think more dangerous is like the Nintendo eShop. Like, have you seen all the hentai and ecchi games there?
Yeah.
Like, that thing is a wild, and it's one of the top selling games. Is like a hentai girlfriend game. I'm just trying to look for what else is new on the Switch, too.
I know. Well, but on
sidebar, I am looking forward to Date Everything, but I am a legal adult.
Yes.
Yeah, that actually looks cool. No, like in that vein, there are a ton of indie games, and like Nintendo has finally gotten smaller games on its storefront. You know, they've built out that storefront in a modern way with indie games. So like there's always something for someone. Like we're good here. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the thing that I'm expecting is some moment where something comes out and it sells a bunch of Switch 2s like all at once after launch day. And I don't know when that's going to come up, because, you know, if I dig a little bit deeper on that feeling, I'm remembering back to the beginning of COVID lockdown, when you couldn't get a Switch at all because
Animal Crossing. Everybody was on Animal Crossing. Animal Crossing came out right before the pandemic, like, really kicked
off. That was like a killer app. That was like a game that sells a lot of consoles on its own.
I will say, this is kind of a weird console. First of all, Ben, this thing will hit whenever Nintendo decides to deign up, use its power to give us a new Mario or give us a new Zelda, right? Like, it's all Nintendo. Nintendo is God, and Nintendo will command when the sales jump. But also, I think a lot of people
are looking forward to a Super Mario Odyssey 2 or whatever.
A lot of people are going to rediscover older games. Like, I think that's it. Like, I'm playing Bowser's Fury more now, and it feels so much cleaner and easier to play now than it did, like, on the old Switch hardware. And I think people will go back and see those things maybe in their titles and have that experience again, too. Donkey Kong is big. I like the new Donkey Kong design. I don't know if you guys have played, Jess, have you played Donkey Kong in Mario Kart yet?
No, I haven't.
He is a delight to play as a character, because it's like you're
controlling. He keeps passing me.
Yeah. He's a little jerk. He's a little prick. It's like Homer Simpson. Like, he just does everything. Like, he will dap.
He dabs, yes. Thank you. Okay, I thought I saw that. I was like, he does it. Oh my God.
He makes it like, it's like Homer Simpson. He's acting like Homer Simpson. It's kind of hilarious to see him work. The problem is he's too big and he kind of takes up too much of the view, but he is fun to play. And that new game, I think, looks like a lot of fun too. So yeah, we'll get to it. Switch 2, an ongoing story. Good luck to everybody who wanted one. It seems like it actually was not that hard to get one. And yeah, we've got follow-up coverage coming. Look out for my review of that controller. I'm sure we'll be talking more about the games and stuff like that. Anything else you want to talk about, Jess? I do want to mention, like, you guys were at SGF while the the protests against the horrific immigration policies of the Trump administration were going on. I don't know if that kind of impacted how you guys saw the event, like trying to do this thing while also people were fighting on the streets to protect immigrants in this country. I don't know if you had any thoughts on that.
I mean, the headline of your story for Summer Games Fest was the one that happened while the Waymos burned. So there's a distinct feeling of the this is fine dog. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, it was an inescapable fact of Summer Game Fest 2025 was the protests happening all around us all the time. It really drove home, I think, this dissonance that we've all been living with since this administration took office. It's just, you're having to put aside these things that feel like extreme emergencies and they're imminent. And they're right in front of our faces, and we have to ignore them and just do our jobs or,
live
play a video game to relax or whatever. Yeah. You have to just kind of live through it, but it's just constantly there. And it's a constant stress. And it was just like a physical manifestation of this at the show where we heard, look, the entire weekend was police helicopters, constant and sirens, just down the streets. It's LA, so it's not too weird, but it was definitely more extreme. And then, yeah, trucks with Mexican flags driving by and, everyone loving that. And then seeing the violence and then finally on the last day, seeing the smoke from the show. It was like, I just turned around.
There's a picture in the article.
Right. Yeah. And that was just the spot where I was just leaving the media lounge, walked by, saw the Capcom booth and turned around, and the smoke was at the end of the alleyway. And it was just this, it hits you, it stops you in your tracks. Right. Yeah. It was very effective and a sign of our times. It was just an encapsulation of this moment in our weird lives right now.
So strange what's happening right now. Well, Adam, if you have further thoughts, I'm sure we'll see you all at the No Kings protests on Saturday, I guess, right? Thank you so much, Jess, for joining us. Where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on Blue Sky. Only there, because everywhere else sucks.
As Jess L. Condit. Yes.
You'll find me. Jess Condit.
We'll find you. Well, there are multiple Jess Condit, so you gotta try Jess L. Yes. Yes.
Dang, I thought I got them all.
Don't say that out loud, Jess. Don't say that.
No,
out loud,
no. I would never get them as in get them a gift.
Let's wrap up WWDC, which I felt like kind of a weak one. I think it felt like Apple was in defensive mode, Ben, where they immediately said like they need more time to work on Siri. They didn't really overemphasize Apple Intelligence, which was the big star of last year's WWDC. Before that, it was the Vision Pro. So basically they've had 2 years where they've like touted these brand new things. Both of them didn't really work out so well. The big thing this time is Liquid Glass, which is the new interface design mentality that they're putting across all of their software. And I wrote a piece at Engadget basically saying like, this is the return of Windows Vista, isn't it? This is Microsoft's Aero design from 2007, and it kind of is. I've been testing the first developer beta of iOS 26, and I love the transparencies. I think it looks good, but it's definitely Vista-like. But there are some key differences. So let me ask you this, Ben. Does Windows Vista strike fear in your heart When I say the name, do you even understand like how crazy
that
time
yes,
was?
I know. I remember Windows Vista, and I remember what a debacle it was when it was released. People really didn't like it, and so when I saw the very slick commercial for Liquid Glass, I'm like, is that all you have to announce at this dub? Like, yes, I know that there were like a bunch of other things, but like this is the thing that most users are going to say, this is the big thing that Apple did this year.
It is kind of...
They're going to make their icons and like all of the UI just a little bit more like magnifying glassy.
Yeah, I mean, as a reminder, DubDub is not a consumer-focused event, even though it has kind of become one with the way they've produced the show. Like, this is a developer conference, and the whole point of this is to like for Apple to cast out like what developers should be aware of for the upcoming year. So before it was Apple Intelligence, they wanted people to try Vision Pro the year before that. Now it's like, hey, get ready, folks. A whole new interface is coming. That means your apps may need to be updated. It means you may need to rethink some things. So for developers, I think this is actually a pretty big deal because Apple doesn't do interface shifts that often. The biggest one iOS and a lot of their platforms had was like iOS 7. Which was pretty over 10 years ago, which is when they switched away from that skeuomorphic design where they had like app icons and apps designed to be like real world objects, which I thought was really, really silly. Like the Voice Memos app was like an old school cassette recorder. I don't think you need to do that. I think we're all grownups here. We don't need to pretend like our little digital apps are like old things. Apple moved away from that towards a flatter design. And now it's like, yeah, they're trying to be a little... A little glossier, a little spiffier. And I honestly think it looks good. But the thing that will probably be a bigger deal for developers, which they just kind of gloss by, is that they're also opening up Apple's language models, Apple's AI models, for developers to implement in their own third-party apps. So that can actually have a bigger deal over the next years as well. But Apple can't really show that off, right? Like, not many people have done that yet. So that's more of like a forthcoming thing. Liquid Glass is the thing you see. I actually think it's pretty good, but what was your first impression, Ben?
So you know how people said like, ooh, wow, like the new thing in iOS 26 was people talking about like, ooh, you might have like circular icons. And I guess this is kind of the garbled way that a little bit of information about Liquid Glass came out. Like, yes, some of the icons are pretty and circular and, warp the image behind them. But I don't know. I would have to, like, interact with it to have a more, like, complicated, take on what I think about it. Because right now, it just feels disappointing. It feels like Apple is trying to say, here's something.
I think a lot of new interface changes, I mentioned this in my piece, you see a new thing that kind of changes the way something you love and use daily works, you're going to see the flaws immediately. It's also really hard to see the benefit of a new interface without having it in your hands, seeing it in person, you know, and actually living with it. So I think like it's just like really there's a lot of like nice elements to adding more transparencies all around. First of all, Apple is sitting on all this like unused graphics processing power on pretty much all their devices, you know? So they have these GPUs in there that can do more than like render flat graphics that Apple has been doing. And that was actually the big problem with Windows Vista. Like Microsoft promised this big, bold, hey, transparent window borders. We're going to do all these flashy things, 3D task switcher as well. They basically, with Windows Vista, Microsoft was trying to like outdo Mac OS X. And people, the youngs may not realize this, but OS X, when it debuted in 2001, it looked unlike any other operating system ever, right? Like the dock had a little bit of transparency. So I actually think Microsoft was trying to one-up that a little bit too. But OS X also just looked really nice and did things that we had never seen a desktop. Like just you could be playing a video in QuickTime and minimize it to your dock, and if you hovered over it in the dock, it would still be playing. You know, like if we are used to things being much more multitasky right now, like you could do many things at once. OS X just like really added a new visual polish to what the desktop experience was. And at the time, you know, right after that, Microsoft had XP, which was this weird cartoonish version of Windows, notoriously buggy, had that really ugly green and blue aesthetic that just felt like you were watching a clown car or something.
Yep. Yep, but that's the windows that I really imprinted on.
So that's pretty much it. So people were really used to that. They were working on Vista for a while. Microsoft was working on Vista for a while. When it came out, it was kind of a notorious flop, because to actually get all those transparency features, you needed a high-powered GPU. Very few people had powerful GPUs in their systems beyond, like, gamers. So now Apple can bring this thing out, which doesn't really seem to add much of a performance hit to existing devices, because they have the GPU power. And from the beta that I've been using, the developer beta, I think a lot of the transparencies look good. When you swipe down from the top left, you look at the notification center. It is just like a really nice way of layering those notifications on top of what's behind it. I think sometimes they go overboard. The control center, which is when you swipe down from the top right and you get those little shortcuts. Sometimes if you're on the home screen, there's like layers upon layers of glass. You know, and that gets visually confusing, and I think will be bad just for visual processing. So here's the thing. I think Apple has a lot of room to tweak this, maybe give people more control over how these transparencies work. But from the like promo video we saw from Apple, they were using like real big slabs of glass and like moving them around to see how they like interact with real world objects. And I kind of get more of that feeling here. There's like lots of nice visual flourishes. When you turn on like the little flashlight thing now, when you turn on the flashlight, it kind of eases in, sort of like you're fading in a little bit. That feels
really
nice. Oh,
the flashlight itself kind of fades in?
It kind of fades in and out more than it did before, because they actually started doing that a couple of versions ago. The new Safari, which is redesigned to take advantage of liquid glass, has this like full screen view. It has a full screen view that is really nice. So as you scroll down, the title bar kind of just it kind of shrinks down and also becomes semi-transparent, so you can still see behind it. It just makes better use of your overall screen real estate too. So we're seeing apps kind of updated around the idea of liquid glass. The Photos app has a lot of this. They really simplified the camera app. There's going to be a lot of adjusting for this, but I think overall it looks good. I'm a sucker for transparencies. I think that's what it comes down to. Was there anything else from WWDC that really struck your fancy, Ben? I don't know if you were paying attention to everything.
I mean, it's funny. Like, yes, you know, we talked about it in the special podcast that you should go listen to, recorded at Apple Park. But you were talking about how iPhones have so much GPU capacity. And now when people think GPU capacity, they think like AI functionality. And
it depends.
Still, like,
it depends, because now Apple has the neural engine, which is a whole separate processing unit, because you don't want to be pushing your GPU for AI stuff. You want to have your GPU work or your AI work being done on these low power NPUs, which are not draining battery life. What they use GPUs for is training AI models. And you're not doing that on your phone. That is something Apple's doing in their data centers. Like, that's something OpenAI and other people are doing in big server farms. You're not going to be running many AI models or building them right on your iPhone. The NPU is going to be doing that sort of work. On a desktop or a laptop, sure, if you want to train your own models, then you could be using GPU power for that. That's sort of like raw horsepower versus... I don't know how to think about it, like a hot rod versus like a Segway, right, or something. Just like a nice, easy way of gliding through a task without like using up too much energy. The NPUs allow for that too. So it's interesting. It's interesting where we are, because the functions of these devices are kind of changing because the hardware is changing, and because we have unspent GPU power, we have these NPUs that can do a lot of background tasks too. Just like a whole bunch of different things. Beyond that, like Dub, I don't know if they talked about macOS Tahoe, specifically macOS Tahoe 26.
I was going to bring up the computerification of iPads, because we have been talking about this for the last couple of WWDCs that were like the division between an iPad, you know, a tablet for... Or like the difference between a tablet and any of a like macOS computer is getting blurrier and blurrier. Like, we've got the M series chips in the iPads now. There's very little that an iPad can do that a macOS computer, full blown like let's say, a Mac Mini can do that a iPad can't.
Yeah, that's a good point, Ben. You know, I feel like people were asking about making iPad OS a lot more Mac-like for a long while. And so essentially what you could do now, you can use turn apps into small windows that you move around on a desktop, and you can resize and rearrange. And wow, what a concept. What a concept. It's something that it felt like Apple was resisting for a very long time on iPad OS. They've had Stage Manager was the thing that debuted there first. That was a way to like easily juggle multiple apps at once, but not really show them on the screen easily. And I think this is a good change. Like, I feel like for the longest time, I've been thinking maybe I should get an iPad Air and just have that be like a mini typing computer. I'll get the typing case for it. That'll be a thing I could tote around, do a little work wherever I am. Right now, that's probably more like the Surface 12 inch for me. But this makes the iPad a lot more usable. And yeah, a lot more Mac-like. Like, will we have a traditional desktop in a Mac desktop and laptop 10 years from now, or will it be more like this? Probably will be more like this.
Yeah, I mean, that's the entire idea of having these M series chips, isn't it?
I mean, the idea is that they can make these things and they're incredibly powerful, and look how far ahead they are of Intel and AMD. One thing I do want to point out that Apple brought to macOS Tahoe 26, which is the full name and a very silly name. And yes, they are changing all the version numbers to correlate to like the upcoming year. So these are like car models where you'll debut it 1 year, but it'll refer to the year coming up. They made the Spotlight search bar incredibly powerful. That is like one of those deeply nerdy things where Mac heads would be like, oh, yeah, that's, I could do a lot there, because now the search will automatically, it gives you a lot of filters, but they're also adding these like shortcuts into it. So you can have like text triggers to perform tasks really quickly. It's sort of like a super powered command line is what they're doing here.
And yeah. I was about to say that.
I can see a certain level of nerd just being really into that. But also I can see how being that's your first step to also towards like a command line that is a voice prompt that is Siri powered in a few years too. And it's just like, Siri, hey, do stuff for me. I could also easily see like how that is going to get us into that whole situation. So not many changes happening in macOS Tahoe 26, but iPadOS 26 is interesting, especially since those changes are coming down to the base level iPad as well. All of that, I think, is useful. iOS 26, from what I've seen, is pretty nice. So I'm looking forward to all those aspects of what's coming up. And yeah, we'll have more details on this. We'll be previewing the various developer and public beta previews of all of Apple software. We'll certainly be talking about, like, we're not talking about new devices yet. That is a fall problem. But we're certainly thinking about, like, how these things could adapt to newer devices. The whole liquid glass thing would be kind of interesting on a super thin phone. Then all of a sudden your phone itself feels like a piece of glass. And just in terms of
this is just reminding me of the like artist renders or like leaked pictures that we've seen for so long of an iPhone that is literally just a piece of glass sitting beautifully on a table.
I keep saying,
I don't know if we're ever going to get there.
Those new iPad Pros feel like, what have you done? How is this a device? So the iPhone is kind of almost getting there. I'm also thinking this just feels like holographic. And it's no wonder that a lot of this interface came from the Vision OS stuff, because that was kind of thinking about how you interact with Mac type and iOS type icons in a different way. So I don't know. We're also seeing the preview of Apple's like holographic ideas here too, I think, because I think we're probably going to get there at some point. Stay tuned to gadget.com for more follow-ups on all this Apple stuff. Certainly there are going to be a lot of rumors heading into September when we get to iPhone season. All right, let's move on to some other news, and you know, related to what Jess was talking about. 404 Media reported that the government was flying Predator drones over the LA protests to surveil the crowds and everything. Don't think those were weapon equipped, but not a great sight. Not something you want to hear. Just in terms of how the administration is like stamping down on these protests, escalating things some more. Predator UAVs deployed over the U.S.
This is one of the first times that we know about that predator drones have observed things happening inside the U.S.
Not for testing.
That's all I have to say about that right now.
Yeah. The lineup of news you provided, Ben, just really paints a picture of like how insane the world is right now. Because the other story we want to briefly mention is Meta says it's spending a ton of money on an AI super intelligence team, which is sort of like saying, and when all these companies do this, when OpenAI does this and Google and everybody, when you talk about AI super intelligence, which is just beyond AGI, the idea of artificial general intelligence, they want to create God. Essentially, like that's kind of what it is.
It's bizarre.
It's so insane.
I mean, especially because both of us have been reading or listening to the Empire of AI audiobook. Like, it now that I'm halfway through this book, I'm like, wow, this is just such marketing. Like, anytime you talk about AI superintelligence, anytime any of these CEOs. I mean, Sam Altman published a blog post on the OpenAI website talking about a gentle singularity this past week. Like, just any situation where they're like, oh my God, you guys, this is like such a huge apocalyptic technology that we're working on. Like, you guys better be ready. Like, any time that they're saying you should be at least a little bit scared is also marketing.
It's all
crazy.
Marketing. And also like the idea of what they're actually proposing is something that seems insane and impossible, right? There is nothing that we see right now says that we can even make AGI a thing. And the idea it is sort of like, oh yeah, we're just going to throw all this AI tech together and hope we create this super intelligence. But they're approaching it with this sort of like religious fervor because they are just hoping this is a thing. They don't like have a roadmap to it. They don't have like a game plan or code to it. They're like, well, we're gonna keep algorithming and maybe the algorithming will get good. Like, we're gonna build these models, we're gonna scale these models. Meta has essentially bought Scale AI, and they've tapped the founder of that startup, Alexander Wang, to kind of like lead up this super intelligence thing. But whenever you hear super intelligence, folks, like, think about it like when religious folks talk about the end times, you know, or sort of like something like that. Something that is not like scientifically proven or predicted, but they are kind of working towards making it happen. And the scary thing about superintelligence and all these AI companies, they want this to make money off of it. They want to be in charge of this thing to make money and be super powerful. Like, that's all it is. So I don't know if this is we're seeing like the beginnings of like how future corporations will work, like if any of this stuff is actually possible. But to me, it feels weirdly, weirdly religious and gross. So,
and I mean, they say in Empire of AI that as Ilya Sutskever left academia and went to industry, that most of the people who are academics were saying, hey guys, AGI is like so far off, so far in the horizon, we can't even see it. And anyone who says that AGI is even possible with the current capabilities is trying to sell you something. Yeah. And at least at the very beginning of OpenAI's life, Sutskever had feet in two worlds. He was trying to keep his academic credibility because he was such a hotshot academic before he moved over to Google. But also like becoming kind of a business person and like seeing how great like making these bold pronouncements can be. And so it's just really confusing. The Scale AI acquisition was a soft acquisition. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of interesting. Like, it's 49% of the company. What does it really matter that technically Scale AI is still its own unit?
It matters for government reasons, right? Like, for you're not monopolizing it, right? You're not potentially monopolizing this technology because it's its own thing. You just hold a very strong sway over it, sort of like a little bit what Microsoft was doing too, because Microsoft has invested a large chunk into OpenAI too. So we've seen soft acquisitions like this all over the place, and a lot of that is to avoid regulatory scrutiny. So, you know, like you haven't acquired a company, you just bought almost half of it and have brought over most of their staff. So stuff like that has been happening over and over again. In other news that shows that the world just doesn't make any sense, Warner Brothers Discovery is going to be splitting into two media giants because maybe the idea of combining a cable-focused network and a movie studio was not a good one. So now they're just like breaking that back up. It's so silly. So a shareholder deck that people are seeing refers to WBD Global Networks and WBD Streaming and Studios, and they're basically going to be split up into one entity. We'll have Warner Brothers Film, Television, Game Studios, along with New Line Cinema, DC Studios, HBO, and HBO Max. The other will have like cable network stuff. So that's CNN, HGTV, Cartoon Network, Discovery. Essentially what they were before they merged into Warner Brothers Discovery.
So. Well, yeah, but now it's under the same umbrella.
Sure. Whatever, man. So that's happening. Will probably not affect your life, but David Zaslav will once again, I don't know. I saw the news that
Zaslav had his pay package denied, though, right?
He had his pay package denied. I saw that news. So maybe there will be some corporate pushback against him, but who knows? Who knows what's going to be happening here? We'll be keeping an eye on that, too. Let's move on to our picks for the week, and I just want to shout out Poker Face, the Rian Johnson show that's on Peacock right now. The world is on fire. Everything is kind of terrible right now. This show brings me joy. It's like little bits of joy. It's old school TV about a main character who has a particular set of skills and travels around and gets into different, you know, mysteries and adventures and hijinks. It's so well written. This is season two of Poker Face. They are like messing around with the formula a bit too, because it's about a woman who has this superpower to detect bullshit. She can detect when people are lying. They never explain why or how. She just has that capability. And that leads to...
It's a little magical.
It's a little bit like that. But it leads to like some really fun scenarios where she becomes a lie detector for the mob or something, or people try to take advantage of her power, or she just... He has to figure out why this alligator ate this dude, played by Kumail Nanjiani. It is a ton of fun. Just like wild stuff. I love that the show exists and can just be so weird and fun and doesn't have to be like a major, you know, prestige streaming TV thing. It's allowed to be fun.
Yeah, like there is a story that occurs like throughout the season, but each episode is pretty much its own case in a way that harkens back to older TV.
It does.
Like people have called this like Columbo.
Very much Columbo. Like I grew up watching Knight Rider and The A-Team too, and those are all shows about just like people going around getting into hijinks, different locations, different characters every episode. They kind of wrapped within 3 to 4 episodes of season two, they kind of wrapped the overarching plot from season one. So I think they're just kind of free to just be weird. And there is weird stuff. Like Kumail Nanjiani is a cop who has a pet alligator, and multiple Cynthia Erivos in an episode. That's the first episode of the season. It's just a ton of fun. So surprise and delight. I love having that when things are bad. This is a show that delivers that for me. Anything you want to shout out, Ben?
Turnstile's new album came out last week. Never Enough. I talked about Turnstile when their last album came out in late 2021. If you like any of the music that comes along with Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, like the classic punk rock and hardcore sort of genres, you will probably like this. I would be really surprised if anyone is finding out about the band Turnstile from this podcast, just because they have been so huge over the last like 6 or 8 months, to the point where Charlie XCX had a little banner on her backdrop during her show at Coachella, where she's like, maybe it's not Brat Summer anymore. It's, you know, a bunch of directors, a bunch of bands. And so there was a little flash of Turnstile Summer. It's a great album. It's definitely moving further away from hardcore. And some people have some feelings about that, of course. But also, if you're into movies, because we're talking a little bit about like visual media, you can go see this in theaters. The Never Enough visual album is also like a pretty great companion to that. So that's what I spent all of last weekend doing. I went to the show album release show on Thursday night. Album came out on Friday. Went to see the movie on Saturday. And it's all good. So if you want to go check that out, definitely do. But hardcore ain't for everybody.
Oh, that's all true. But yeah, they sound cool. I've heard a bit of them, Ben. So thank you again for shouting them out.
And that's it for the show this week. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by me, Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at...
at Devendra on Blue Sky, and talk about movies and TV at the Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you need me, I'm at Hey Billman on Blue Sky. Email us at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes, because I promise you that actually helps us reach new listeners. And you can subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. That includes Spotify.
Thanks, folks. We're out.